Case number 21-4106, United States of America v. Eduardo Velasquez. Oral arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Richard P. Cudicci for the appellant.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Judge Keplich, Judge Rogers, Judge McGrath. I am Richard Cudicci. I am CJA counsel for Eduardo Rios Velasquez. It is an honor and a privilege to be here today, and likewise, it's an honor and a privilege to be a member of the CJA panel in the Northern District of Ohio. This case brings us from the Northern District of Ohio, Eastern Division from Youngstown. We were here once before, and we're here once again. And so, why are we here? Tui or not Tui? Because this case gives this court a great ability to make a distinction relative to 2E or 2A. That's a good starting point. That's something I raised down below. That's something I raised in this appeal. That's something I believe that is before this court. So we're not here to talk
about that last time around. We probably talked about it.
Well, Judge
Rogers,
I think that I raised it sufficiently when I argued the distinction between 2A and 2E. I thought when I brought that up, that would be sufficient for this court to take a look at it, not secondary to the fact that I read the remand as a remand for sentencing. So I'm hopeful you will think about that. We're not here to talk about guilt. This court has already ruled upon that. We're not talking about a jury verdict. We're here to talk about the United States sentencing guidelines. Let's talk.
I can't speak for my colleagues, but as for me, I'd really like to focus on 2X, which is what we remanded to have considered. Is that correct, Dad?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm
so
here to
if
speak.
You want to take time talking about what, at least in my view, we've already resolved, you can do that. But,
I mean, I share that sense. I mean, we specifically addressed two of the three arguments, I think, that we had in the brief, but there is the remaining 2X1.1. That might be the best thing for us to focus on. I would suggest we echo Jeff Rogers.
Yes, Your Honors, and I can assure you I'm here to focus on that. Let's talk 2X1, because this distinction of this case relative to 2X1 is critical. So let's talk about the USSG for a moment. The sentencing guidelines have a purpose. The mission statement for sentencing is to provide for just punishment. What's fair? So the sentencing guidelines are strictly a roadmap to get us to 3553A. They're not mandatory, but what they give us is an opportunity to take a look at each case on a case-by-case basis. That was U.S. v. Soto, fact-specific, so that we come up with a fair sentence. So in this sense, we have a situation where a couple jailbirds are talking about, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. We're going to get rid of Tyra, who the cinch was hired to find her, not kill her.
So we already know that he's guilty of murder for hire. And I mean, you said in the last opinion specifically that he used a facility of interstate commerce with the intention to enter into a murder agreement, murder somebody in return for something that I think that we specifically said in substance.
Yeah.
So the question now is whether you're entitled to a 3-point reduction under 2X1.1B2, right? That's the issue before.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And that, I mean, so I understand your comments about sort of the objects of the sentencing guidelines regime, but we do have a specific question before us, which is whether your client, the record here, supports a 3-point reduction under this particular guideline. And the guideline tells us what the requirements are for that entitlement. And it must be that your client did not complete all the acts that the conspirators believe necessary on their part for the successful completion of the substantive offense. Right?
Correct, Your Honor. You know that all too well, more than all of us, from the U.S. Versus Susan case, where you talk about incomplete conspiracy. That's exactly what happened here.
Well, so what is, it says the successful completion of the substantive offense. What is definite article? What is the substantive offense for purposes of our decision?
Sure, and that is not assault. It's not attempted murder. Let's stick with what my client is charged with. Take a look
at it. Isn't it what he was convicted of here? Murder for hire?
He is convicted of, look at the indictment, yes, murder for hire, but what does the element require? Pecuniary offer or receipt?
I was guilty of that, Larry, so far.
So we're moving on now. The guilt's done. Now we're talking about sentencing. So what's fair? What's sufficient but not greater? That's what's so critical.
What's fair is whether it was successfully completed and what was the subsequent offense. Those are the issues.
Exactly. But when you take a look at that and you also look at the behavior,
You can rule in your favor to sort of get away from the words and talk about fairness. Is that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The only way you can rule in your favor is to sort of get away from the words and just talk about fairness.
No, we need to look at whether there was an offer or a receipt.
Jury said there was.
Well, good for the jury. We don't know what the jury said. We know they found.
I think some things are common ground here. I mean, our court has already held that your client committed murder for hire. And specifically decided that he said he did all these things, had the intention to enter into an agreement to kill Tyra Goings in return for something of that. So,
just to qualify that, we didn't hold that he actually did those things. We hired that he inspired to do those things.
He did, but that's not what the guidelines are all about. The guidelines now look to, A, is there an enhancement, and B, does he get a three-level reduction? So in Simon, that's what they talked about. They talked about, well, you got to look at the primary offense, you got to give the enhancements, but what did Simon do? They gave a reduction. And what's critical here is, what does the enhancement talk about? So if it's 2A, then we look at, was there a receipt or an offer? And Judge, you're saying, well, the jury already said, this court already said, this court affirmed the jury's verdict. This court then moved on to the question of, well, does 2X1 now apply? So now we're not looking at what the jury thought. Now we are looking, well, where's the solicitor? My client was not a solicitor. He wasn't the boss.
I'm not sure what we're talking about here. 2X1.1. You're arguing that you have an entitlement to a three-level decrease in base offense level, right?
Yes.
Under 2X1.1.
That's right, Your Honor, yes.
So I'm sort of like focused on 2X1.1.
Precisely.
Not sort of more high-flown abstract ideas.
But I don't believe those are abstract. If we're looking
but let's just stay with me on this, all right? Because I think the three of us want to talk about 2X1.1.
Sure.
And I think that's probably fair. And the question is, whether your client had committed all the acts necessary on, your client and the other guy who was on the phone, committed all the acts they believe necessary on their part for the successful completion of the substantive offense. The substantive offense, I think, is murder for hire. And so I guess my question is, what acts do you think remain for them to engage in order to complete the offense of murder for hire? Not murder, but murder for hire.
lots of things. How about a conversation between the boss, the solicitor, Leon, and my client? How about that? Let's start with that. Number two, there's no evidence that my client even met Tyra. There's no evidence that he ever saw Tyra. There's no evidence that he ever completed any type of overt acts. And, Your Honor, that's what's critical to look at.
And you can conspire to do something without actually doing it.
Well, he was conspiring with some, yes, sir, with some jailbirds.
Yes, I see your time is short. Let me ask you a question that we suggest that you be familiar with and pay attention to. And that is 2X1.1B2 is what you rely upon for this part of your argument. But 2X1.1C is a cross-reference which says when a conspiracy is expressly covered by another guideline section, apply that section.
Yeah.
And there is. And at least two other circuits have said .5 is such an express coverage, and therefore you just don't apply 2X1.1B when the proper guideline is 2A1.5. And I know you can argue that that wasn't raised, and I don't want to raise that with your opposing counsel, but assuming it's properly raised, or that we can rely on it as a proper interpretation of the guideline, why doesn't that just preempt that start? You can't rely on B2 because B2 doesn't apply. Because B2 is part of a guideline that doesn't apply. Instead, 2A1.5 applies. What's the answer to that? That's
well, I didn't do that. First of all,
that's the reason I really want to have more argument in this case. So I ask you that question.
Well, thank you, Judge Rogers. First of all, I believe this is attempt. And if you look at the offense guidelines that expressly cover attempts, include no 2A1.5 in that section. So now we're looking on the next page where we're talking about the process. Well, so this is an attempt as far as, so whether you're talking about solicitation, and I mentioned there's no solicitor here, and my client is not a solicitor.
I'm talking about conspiracy.
So
just because of the red light's on, answer his question on its terms, that your client has been convicted of conspiracy, not attempt. Conspiracy to commit murder. And Judge Rogers asked a specific question about the applicability of 2X1.1. I think we would all appreciate an answer directly to that question.
Thank you, Judge Kepler. The answer to that is when we're looking at guideline applications, the court must look at a factual basis, not just from a jury or a U.S. guideline has to be defined by the trial court. So if you take the argument and analysis in Simon said, the court said, don't just look at the substantive offense. Look at 2X1. And that's why I think this court should rule in favor of my argument, because the other circuits are not as wise as the Sixth Circuit.
I mean, is your response then, or the conclusion at least, that 2X1.1 does apply here?
2X1.1 absolutely applies here, and it goes on the analysis of looking beyond just what the jury verdict is. If you look at the factual basis,
okay,
and the factual basis, Your Honor, says there's no offer or receipt. That's in the indictment. That's what the sentencing court must look at. Not just a jury verdict. And this goes across the board.
Do you agree or disagree with the Simon case?
The Simon case is
that's
an interesting.
Yes, no,
well,
wrong. It says when an attempt, or when a conspiracy expressly covered by a non-appropriate offense guideline, however, the court should instead apply that guideline section. And then he applies that specifically to conspiracy to commit murder. It seems to just say you can't rely on 2X1.1B. This is in 1291 of the opinion.
It does, Your Honor.
Right or wrong.
Let's not stop with conspiracy. We need
to. You've got to answer this question directly.
I'm answering it.
You want 30 seconds to talk about, explain further, but you must answer the question that Judge Roger asked.
Yes, Your Honor. And okay, the answer to that is the guideline provides not just for conspiracy, but then we look at the indictment, which talks about money. So if you when
so
you're
the
looking,
answer to what the guideline says, you have to look at the facts in order to answer what the meaning of the guideline.
Yes, you must look at the factual basis. Not that it just comes from a jury verdict. So my answer has to remain consistent in terms of how my client's approaching this this questioning. The issue of as Simon comes along.
That's fine. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. You'll have your rebuttal, which you will get to done.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. Daniel Rankin on behalf of the government. 2F1.1B2 doesn't apply here for two reasons.
Does?
Does not.
And the reduction part of it.
Yeah, the three-level reduction. The first reason is reason government identified in its brief. Velasquez and Cordero completed all the acts they believe necessary for conspiracy to commit murder for hire.
The tenuous argument, in my opinion, see why it's at least tenuous. I mean, there was no murder, there was no payment, there was just no agreement to do that.
But
okay, so the whole idea of having a difference between a conviction for the crime and a conviction for a conspiracy to commit the crime is that if you actually commit the crime that you conspire to do, you should be punished more. Right?
Yes.
That's the theory that underlies B. It's hard to see on the surface at least how you could say that when it's an agreement to complete, it's an agreement to murder and then get paid for that. He didn't murder, he didn't get paid for it. So therefore it's not complete. So on its face it looks like this is a B2 case.
Until you look at the guideline itself, which says that they believe that they believed, which is believed is kind of a funny word to put in the guideline, because how do you
intend to
prove they believe? But
isn't it seems odd to me because 1958A covers specifically says conspires. So the completed offense is a conspiracy.
Yes.
Yes. So it would always be true? The guideline, the reduction would never apply because it would always be the substantive offense. It would be conspiracy. Because that's, it's confusing to me, and I suppose that's why perhaps the 2X1.1 doesn't even apply because there's a specific guideline that applies. Because otherwise you would have this completed offense of conspiracy and it would always be true that you wouldn't get the reduction. Does that make any sense? I mean, that's what I'm looking at 1958A. Because it specifically says all of this thing with intent or who conspires to do so. But the conspiracy is embedded in the provision, right? In the substantive provision.
Unless they didn't complete all the acts, or they didn't complete all the acts they believe necessary for the murder for hire.
But didn't complete all the acts necessary for a conspiracy to murder for hire? I mean, what would that look like? Because
I share this concern. Maybe the question is, is conspiracy to commit murder for hire under the terms of the statute, as it says, or at least conspires to do so, is that merged into the substantive offense of 1958A, so that there simply can't be a separate offense of conspiracy because that is included, it's encompassed within the definition of the crime itself.
In some way it is, because conspiracy just requires an agreement. You know, it requires the underlying.
Right. You don't even pick up the instrument in interstate commerce, right?
Right.
You know, you're on a park bench, but nobody's yet like made a phone call or something.
Right.
That would be the conspiracy to have an agreement, right?
Right, and they voluntarily entered in as an overt act.
So then they committed murder for hire because it's conjunctive, right? It's an overlord. I think that's whatever.
No, yeah, right.
or conspires to do so, right?
Yes.
So then, where does that leave us here?
At least you can see why it leaves us a little bit puzzled. And if that's so, I'm wondering why you don't argue simply that it doesn't apply under B. I'm just perceiving these things. It's adopted by other circuits. It seems to be the plain meaning. But we just don't use 2X1.1B when conspiracy is covered by another offense guideline, which it is.
Well, that's
2A1.15. But you don't argue that, right?
We did not argue that, Your Honor. I didn't, quite frankly, I missed it.
It's not that the fact was that the Department of Justice doesn't want to rely on that or there's some policy aspect of the argument or anything like that.
I focused on what the district court did and what the probation department did. I didn't look, and I should, because
well, in that situation where you missed it, which is candid, and I appreciate your point.
I'm not sure. Something's missed, but go ahead. I'm still trying to make this up.
Well, it becomes confusing because the guidelines aren't designed for you ever to get there, one could argue. And that's exactly what when the other circuits that we asked you to be very prepared to talk about, when they got this, they just said they're not going to use 2X1.1 because there's a cross reference in the story. This is only needed when you have something that isn't referred to specifically somewhere.
Right. That's for Gorsuch.
Is that right?
Exactly.
Now you've had a chance to look at it?
Yes. Even when we look at just the title of 2X1.1, attempt solicitation conspiracy. I mean, like in parentheses right after, not covered by specific.
So is there a problem with our relying on that if we're convinced by that?
No,
because
I don't think
so. Didn't raise it. So can you waive something like that, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I don't know, but I'm 90 seconds behind you. So just to walk through this, all right? So what we're saying, or what this exchange is suggesting, is that there cannot be a separate offense of conspiracy to commit murder for hire because it's merged into murder for hire by the terms of 1958A. Right? That's sort of.
Well, because you're always going to have to have two.
Number one.
You're always going to have to have two participants, right? I mean, that's. You can't just have murder for hire.
If we assume that's true,
one person,
then what's being suggested is that we would not look at 2X1.1, which is the sort of generally applicable guideline for conspiracies, right? Instead, we go right to murder for hire guideline, right? And that tells us, that gets us to 37 in the end, just like this would without the reduction.
Yes.
I just wanted to catch up.
If the guidelines, it's a guideline kind of argument. I mean, the guidelines say you can be convicted of conspiracy, you commit various things. There's a statutory basis for all of those, but there may not be a guideline for all of those, but there's a specific guideline for conspiracy to commit murder.
Which is identified in the application.
Therefore, if the cross references apply, then there's just no. The argument would be that it's consistent with the scheme of the guidelines, because if you look at 2A1, I can't say these numbers and letters, 2A1.5, because 2A1.5 talks about the situation about whether the offense actually results in a death. So it makes those kinds of distinctions right within 2A1.5. It doesn't have to be taken care of.
Take this away.
From
me.
It interrupted me.
You're setting a bad example. Don't even bring it in the court.
But it does.
That's my question. But
where were we?
It does.
We're clear about what the argument is that was apparently adopted in these other circuits. To what extent are we required or permitted to rely on that argument
Honor, we've, there's a number of cases that say this court can apply on any cases.
Any cases.
And that's what we rely on here. We didn't argue it. We focused on what the district court did. Once I saw the, once we received the letter from this court asking us to be prepared for this issue, it became fairly obvious that 2X1.1B2 and that was inapplicable because of 2A1.5. You know, they cross-reference each other. You're right, 2A1.5 also considers different circumstances where the person's killed, that raises the offense level.
That does seem to bear on
yeah.
It's still a dead person after murder for hire, even though it's not required. I think your argument that it's a completed offense, so, you know, I mean, even if we were looking at 2S1.2, that's a reason why it doesn't apply. He's done it. He said that in the last opinion.
And that's what the court,
your assertion, I think, is likely correct.
What was the guideline for the 1958A? It's not 2A1.5.
For conspiracy, it's 2A1.5. It's for murder for hire, it's just 2B. Isn't it 2B? It's 2B.
Well, if you're able to, can you walk us through how that, with 2B, what you say applies? Because we can't look at conspiracy stuff now. We're looking at the conclusion of that murder for hire. So, what is murder for hire?
It's 33.
Didn't the district court say 37 here?
That was with the four levels for receiving something if you commit a crime.
Isn't that always going to be part of this? Isn't that like repetitive element of the offense?
This court has found that, and other courts have found that it's not like a double counting situation or anything like that.
Okay.
So it's, they found that it's an appropriate four level enhancement.
Okay.
I'm confused. This 2X1.1 is about conspiracy generally. It wouldn't apply, it doesn't apply if the conspiracy is covered by something else. That suggests to me that guideline applied to the substantive offense, 2A1.5. But it didn't apply here to the substantive offense, right?
Yes. Because, I'm sorry.
You're saying it was 2B something?
Yes. Well, that was the issue in the previous appeal, whether 2E should apply or 2A.
Right. I'm sorry, yes. The 2E or the 2A, right?
Yes. And this court found 2A based on the Sansky and a couple other cases.
Okay.
Because this was a conspiracy, not just a substance of murder.
Right. It was a conspiracy. It was the conspiracy part of 1958A.
Yes.
So once 2A applied, so 2A did. So 2A was the guideline that applied on resentencing.
Yes.
So that's where the 33 comes from. 2A1.5. Okay, so then 2X isn't applicable.
Because 2B would have been guideline level 32, it would have been 1 month.
Okay, I got it. I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you.
So 2B1.4 tells us to apply a base. Tell me wrong. Is 2B1.4? What applies to it?
I think so. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But that's 32. That was litigated before.
Right. So it's a base offense level 32.
But with
conspiracy. Or the offense level triple to the underlying of all the time, which is what? Did we already cover this in the last
To a certain extent.
We did cover this part in the last. You said that as the other courts and appeals have consistently said, for one reason or another, the reasoning isn't always entirely consistent. It says says apply the greater, and there is an offense level greater. Level to underline unlawful conduct 432, but for conspiracy, there's a specific provision dealing with conspiracy you committed. The base level is 33, and you can add 4 if it involved the offer or receipt of pecuniary value. It doesn't say whether it actually carries it out, because you do have a seed if there's actual debt when you go over to 2A1.1, so there's a articulated scheme for how much you get punished for this kind of conspiracy. That's all been decided as far as I'm concerned in our previous case. The question is whether we're going to apply 2X1.1, which is a general provision for what to do with conspiracies when there's no guideline that deals with a conspiracy. The guideline only deals with what you get punished for the actual underlying crime. So if you're...
That's because that's all there is.
That's all there is, yeah.
Right, you're saying.
No, the idea is 1958 deals with conspiracy to commit the underlying crime. There is something that underlies the conspiracy. That's dealt with in 1958. But more importantly, it's dealt with by a specific guideline, which is conspiracy to commit murder. So you don't have to figure out what the guideline is by looking at the guideline for the underlying offense and then using 2X1.1 to say, well, that's also the standard for committing the crime. It's the same. It's an incorporation by reference, as it were. But you don't need to do that incorporation by reference to figure out where it is for conspiracy. And you've got a guideline which deals explicitly with conspiracy, which the various courts have said is 2A1.5.
That's the most straightforward.
The words and the scheme of the guidelines, when you look at them all and see how they make sense, if they do, you just wouldn't apply B. Maybe it's too abstract an argument to jump out of anybody.
It really is.
There's no cases that hold the contrary, are there?
No, I didn't find any. And it really isn't that abstract. It's something that I think is a pretty straightforward answer when you look at the guidelines. If there's no further questions,
I think we're good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe I'm not clear on how I'm presenting this. And we need to go back to the United States sentencing guidelines. Okay, what's the purpose? What's the mission? But let's also distinguish this case. We're not talking about murder here. That's not the crime. You know, U.S. Preacher said very clearly, this statute does not prohibit murder or attempted murder. It's imperative for this court to focus in on murder for hire versus murder. So my client is not accused of conspiring to murder. He is charged in the indictment with conspiracy for murder for hire. That distinction is critical. You can't talk about murder. What's murder? Well, or what's attempted murder? You know, shooting at someone. So that distinction of murder for hire, because what's important about that, Your Honors, is, okay, conspiracy, we're talking about conspiracy. But we left out the last part. It's conspiracy for murder for hire. So is this abstract thinking? Yeah, perhaps it is, and that's not what the purpose of the United States guidelines are. It's a practical reasoning that we need this. So in this case, why shouldn't 2X1 apply? So if this court says 2A1.5, which is conspiracy for murder, because you didn't like the 2E1, which is more appropriate in my opinion, and I believe it is plain error for this court to review clearly in this application. But when you look at the cross references, you can't just say murder, because the distinction is not being charged with murder versus, in this case, being charged with murder for hire. So what's the distinction? Murder for hire. Intent. You're having an intent to murder someone.
You pick up the phone with a certain intent and you commit an offense, right?
Well, yes, but you know, when you talk about incomplete acts, I gave you a whole surge of incomplete acts.
Right. Sus- in terms of the offense, I mean, you pick up the phone with a certain intent, and the offense is complete act.
Well, if you believe that factual basis, but that's not what we're reviewing on sentencing. The purpose of sentencing is take a look by the trial judge to apply the guidelines for the purpose of sentencing. It's not like in the state courts, well, you're convicted, you get 3 to 5. So the purpose of USSG is to figure out where we fall in the sentencing by the trial judge who heard it all. And critical to that as well is when we make application for just sentence, sufficient but not greater. Remember, we're in a roadmap to get the 3553A. That is what USSG is for. So are we splitting hairs? If you look at the indictment, and I urge the court to be critical on not just the conspiracy component, but the failure of exchange for money. And that's where 2X1 comes into play. I don't think you should just throw out 2X1.1 on a murder for hire. This case is very fact specific. And what gives this court the opportunity to define how 2X1.1 will apply to murder for hire is not just ethereal thinking, but the practicum that comes from the obligation of the sentencing court to provide a fair 3553A sentence from the roadmap of USSG. So if you throw out 2X.1 and you throw out Simon, because Simon said clear, what did the court say in Simon? The trial court should not just rely on
the gut.
Yes.
Well, that, you get a variance for that. This issue, the issue in this case is whether the guidelines were properly calculated. I'm going to ask you, I know your time is up. Is it okay if I ask?
Well, ask what you want.
You got 2X1.1C.
Yes.
I can read it. It says, I'm leaving out the irrelevant words, when a conspiracy is expressly covered by another offense guideline section, you would agree that 2A1.5 is a guideline section, right?
I do agree it is. I don't agree it's the appropriate one.
I know. I'm just trying to.
The court often gets
this work. The most basic question is whether this is an offense guideline, another offense guideline section. It is another offense guideline section, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now the next question is conspiracy expressly covered by that section? I'm looking at that section. It says, first word, conspiracy. Ergo, therefore, this cross-reference applies, right?
Yes, but what are we here for today? For this court?
No, wait a minute now. If it applies, then I draw the conclusion that 2X1.1B does not apply. Have I lost the logic? I'm just talking words and logic now. I'm not talking about the guidelines for advisory and all that. Are you?
I do not agree with that. Could be conceptual.
So you think the cross-reference can apply, but then we apply B even so, just because it fits.
Well, if you split the hair such that you say the just punishment section that roadmaps you to 3553A should not apply, let's keep it clear, murder.
3553A is.
Yes, Your Honor, but you're
trying to get the meaning of the guideline words. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, what we have to do, you know, is figure out which guidelines apply. And then, you know, once the district court figures out the right guidelines application, the district court can decide whether it's going to kind of stay within the range or reject it. And what you're talking about, 3553A, fairness, et cetera, that's the subsequent question whether you're going to just reject the advice of the guidelines. But if the court chooses the wrong guideline, you'd be here saying procedurally unreasonable. Send it back, and you'd be right. So that's what Judge Rogers is trying to sort out.
And I understand that.
So you're talking about a later stage. He's talking about an antecedent stage.
Well, I think they're all conjoined, but I hear what you're saying, Judge Rogers, but what I'm trying to point out is this court is here to make a distinction and to make precedent.
Let me ask this. If we were to decide that you lose on this issue, would you say that you do not have enough chance to respond, or do you, are you going to ask for, I'm not saying you should, that you should ask for the chance to respond to my, because it wasn't made by your opponent?
Look,
I feel like you responded enough today so that you can't say you never had a chance to respond.
I think the government waived the argument below, but I think that when we're here to provide the answer.
If they waived it, then we can't rely on it. We just have to apply the guidelines as normally interpreted.
Well, you can do whatever, the court can do whatever the court wants to do. Well, in terms of.
You can affirm on any basis supported by the right. The district court said that it's 37 base offense level. If we think that's correct, for reasons not argued by the government, of course we can. We're not going to reverse the district court being right because the party didn't make it.
Right, and you've already found 2A1 is the answer. So that's the law of the land. But that doesn't go to the distinction that we're trying to make, the appellant is trying to make, to encourage this court to make a precedent across the districts that will satisfy the conceptual basis on the big picture. When we're talking about murder for hire, and I ask you to not lose track of that. It's not, Your Honor, it's not just conspiracy. It's conspiracy, murder for hire, and that goes along with the other factual pattern of money.
Okay. All right. I mean, that sounds like a good place to.
If you want a chance to respond to this more, because it's not raised in your opponent's brief in these terms, you know how to ask for that, right?
Well,
I'm not saying you do or you should. I'm just saying you know how to ask for that.
I've not done it before, but I...
To write, to prepare something in writing in response to that argument.
I'm happy to do so.
How much time do you want before you decide whether to ask for something like that?
You'll have to forgive me, Your Honor. I have not had experience that before, but probably 30 or 60 days for any...
That's too long.
Oh, okay.
We need... This case has been pending for quite a while. If we're going to have supplemental briefing, is that what we're talking about
here? I'm reluctant to affirm on the grounds that we're not arguing by one side without giving the other side a chance
so,
to respond to it. What's a fair chance? Maybe it's just this argument.
Mr. Kudachi, the discussion here has we've taken up the question whether 2X1.1 just simply doesn't apply at all. Because of the idea that conspiracy to commit murder for hire is merged into the offense of murder for hire. So there is no separate conspiracy, it's all just a subsequent offense. So the 2X1.1 conspiracy guideline, generally applicable, the conspiracy guideline doesn't apply at all. You're arguing it does apply, right?
Yes.
And so if you would like to submit anything in writing, arguing that 2X1.1 does apply nonetheless, and you could challenge the premise that conspiracy for murder to hire is merged into the offense itself, and there's no separate conspiracy offense, or you can make any argument you want that 2X1.1 still applies, notwithstanding that 1958A seems to encompass conspiracy into murder for hire itself. You're welcome to do that. I would suggest you ought to give us like a letter brief or whatever. I don't really care. But like within a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, because this thing's been hanging around for a long time, and we need to give you both an answer. Is that fair?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, about 3 weeks.
3 weeks would be a good effort or goal, I should say.
That's not going to disrupt any plans on your end?
Well, I'm here to serve as CJA counsel, and I'm here to make that a priority.
Okay.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
If that's comfortable, it doesn't throw off any of your pre-existing...
Well, is 4 weeks too much?
No, it's not. But 4 weeks, that's a good compromise.
Okay.
Wow, so why don't you give us an...
I feel a little better at the moment then.
So why don't you give us that supplemental briefing in 4 weeks, whatever that day is. I think you guys have already sort of, you know, said what you want on this.
Okay.
You got your own.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for this